Maybe there's a storm drain near your house. Do you ever think about what goes in there and where it ends up? Everything from the wastewater from people washing cars to dog poo can end up in storm drains. And the drains lead with few impediments to the nearest stream, meaning all the stuff we didn't want in the street gutter ends up in the water with the fish. And no surprise, the gunk in the water can affect the development of fish, specifically zebrafish and coho salmon, as shown in a recent study of stormwater effects. It's published online in Nature as of February 12th. Two of the five authors join us on the exchange. Jennifer McIntyre is with Washington State University at the Puyallup Research and Extension Center. Thanks for joining us, Jennifer.
Hi, Jeffrey. Glad to be here.
And Allison Coffin's with us as well. She's also with Washington State University, but in Vancouver at the Department of Integrative Physiology and Neuroscience. Hi, Allison.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Good to have you both. So let's get real basic. I mean, there are still a few people who call storm drains sewers. They're not sewers, though, are they, Jennifer?
No, they're not. Although in a lot of cities, especially older cities, they will combine with the sewer so that if it rains a lot, if you get a really heavy rain, you can in fact get an overflow of the sewer into the storm sewer system, and then that can go out into the water as well.
Oh boy, so then we have untreated sewage in the stream as well as the stuff that came down the storm drains?
Yeah, good times.
Yeah, truly. Allison, what kinds of stuff ends up in storm drain water even without the sewage part?
That's actually a question I'm going to defer to Jennifer. I'm more the fish sensory person here.
Okay.
Yeah, so stormwater runoff ends up being a really complicated mixture. We're just starting to get an idea of how very complex it is. We know that there are things like heavy metals that get into it. We know there are things like hydrocarbons coming from burning fossil fuel and the wearing of our brakes and there are from our tires, things like that. But it turns out there are like 10,000 chemicals in there, and some of them we don't even know what they are yet.
In fact, that your work mentions a PAH. The H is hydrocarbons. What's the rest of that?
Polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons.
Ah, I can see why you abbreviate it.
Yeah.
Which means what? I mean, it's, you know, gas and oil and stuff like that. What else?
Yeah, a lot of the chemicals that that you find in gasoline, fossil fuel, also combustion products. So that includes not only chemicals that come out of your fireplace chimney, but also the chemicals that come out of your car exhaust. And what we've been learning is that not only do those get into the air and contribute to air pollution and problems in humans, but they will also fall out into the water and cause problems with fish, including problems with their hearts. That's something we've been researching in another area.
So there has been some research into stormwater well before what you're doing here, you're saying?
Yes, yes. This is a new collaboration that we're doing. We've done the bulk of the stormwater research with impacts on fish, and now we're lucky to work with Allison on the neuroscience side of it.
So, Allison, talk about what you were looking to find here. What was the original impetus for this bit of research?
The original question was really to ask, how is the stormwater impacting the development of these fish, both zebrafish that we can study easily in the lab and coho salmon, which are really the fish swimming around in stormwater and other possibly polluted water in the Northwest. And we know, as Jennifer was saying, that the stormwater can negatively impact the fish's hearts, which can have immediate impacts on their survival. We were really curious about less immediate or less obvious impacts. So even if the fish survived developing in these stormwater polluted waters, would there be problems with the fish's development and specifically sensory systems that might impact their ability to detect the world around them and survive and thrive long term?
So for the folks who don't know zebrafish, are they present in waters of the Northwest? Or are they just a good lab fish?
Definitely not present in waters of the Northwest, or if they are, they really shouldn't be there.
Okay.
They are found in slow-moving rivers and rice paddies in India and other places in the East. But they are the lab rat or lab mouse of the fish world. And that actually got its start in Eugene, Oregon. So they have been a very popular lab fish for decades now.
Do they just propagate quickly and they do all their stuff and developing right before you, that sort of thing?
That's pretty much it. Right. So the adults are mature at a few months of age and they can lay a lot of eggs every few weeks for over a year. And one of the really cool things about these fish is that the eggs are small and transparent, and we can watch the fish develop in the egg in real time. We don't need to take it out of the egg. We don't need special equipment. We can just put it under the microscope and watch it unfold.
Wow, that is a great benefit, I would think.
It really is, and that's what's made zebrafish so popular for so many studies, from studies of heart development to the studies that we did looking at their sensory systems.
We're talking to Allison Coffin and Jennifer McIntyre at Washington State University. Allison's in Vancouver, Jennifer's in Puyallup. We're talking about their research into the effects of stormwater on the development of fish. Zebrafish, you just heard about. We'll talk about coho salmon as well. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions and comments. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So if we're talking about lab work, then did you essentially bring the storm water to the fish, Allison?
We did, and Jennifer can talk more about the collection process. That's really her team that collects the storm water, and then they store that and freeze it, and they've shown that the freezing doesn't have any effect on what's in the storm water. It's just as if it came right off the roads. And she sends storm water down to us, and we then were exposing the zebrafish in the lab to the storm water and looking at how this was impacting their development. We were also looking at the coho salmon, and in this case, those were fish that were being treated at a hatchery facility.
So Jennifer, I mean, how did you choose where to get the storm water and under which conditions? I mean, you get a bunch of different highways, a bunch of different kinds of weather conditions. What choices did you make there?
Yeah, great questions. For the duration of time that we've been studying stormwater runoff, my research team, which is about 6 years now, almost all of the runoff that we've been studying is coming from one location, and the reason we chose that location is that it's an elevated highway, and there are downspouts from that highway that lead directly into the parking lot of my collaborators at NOAA Fisheries in Seattle. So we literally just, you know, put a collection container under these downspouts from the highway and are able to collect it whenever it rains.
Since it is NOAA Fisheries, I mean, they generally collect that water anyway for their own experiments?
The experiments that they do with it are the ones that they do with me. So
okay.
it's a joint effort.
So I understand there were different concentrations of storm water the fish were exposed to.
Yes. So obviously, while the storm water is running straight off of our roadways and bridges into lakes and rivers, it's being diluted out as soon as it enters the water. It's not just that there's a little ball of storm water floating around in the river, but it's going to spread out, just like dye dropped into a glass of water. So we wanted to look at different concentrations of storm water to see how more realistic conditions, once the storm water had been diluted out, floating around, how that might impact the development of these fish, and specifically their lateral line sensory system, which helps them to sense the water movement around them.
So talk about that, Allison. What did you find? I mean, this is an important thing for a fish to have because it's a lot of things about the fish's orientation. I mean, I guess what we would consider balance for those of us who walk on 2 feet.
Right, or swim with several fins. Right. So it's very important for the fish, not just for balance, but for really knowing what's going on immediately around them. So the lateral line is this system of little cells. They're called hair cells, not because they have hairs like we have on our heads. Fish don't have those kinds of hairs. But they have little hair-like things that stick out, in this case, into the water. Or in our case, we also have these in our ears that stick into the fluid in our inner ears. And for us, they help us to hear and to find our balance. And for fish in their lateral line, they stick out into the water and they move when the water around the fish moves. And so this is the way the fish knows if there's something moving around by them that could be another fish in a school, that could be a predator that wants to eat them or something they might want to eat, or that could just be water flowing in a stream, which is particularly important for our local salmon, because they can use that water to determine are they swimming upstream or downstream.
And so what effects did you notice from the fish that were exposed to the higher concentrations of storm water? How different were their lateral lines and the development therein?
So what we noticed is that they had about 20% fewer cells, and so that doesn't seem like a lot of cells, but they also had fewer clusters of these cells. And so what that would mean is that they would be less able spatially to detect what's going on around them. So if we think about our visual world, when we look at something, we see a complete visual picture. We see everything in front of us. Now, if somebody has, say, a hole in their retina, they're going to see some black spots. They're not going to get a complete picture. And we think that's what's going on with these fish, in that a normal fish, a healthy fish, could feel the water movement all around it. But a fish that was raised in stormwater, which would have fewer little clusters of these cells and fewer cells within them, would have some holes in that sensory environment. It wouldn't be able to feel as much of the water moving around it.
The study title refers to larval zebrafish and salmon embryos. Did you see similar effects on the salmon embryos?
We did. So we didn't do quite as much with the salmon embryos. We didn't have as many of them, but we did see the same effects in both species. So what we see in our little lab rats, our zebrafish, we really think also applies to the coho salmon that we care about here.
Allison Coffin and Jennifer McIntyre are two of the five authors of Urban Stormwater Runoff Negatively Impacts Lateral Line Development in Larval Zebrafish and Salmon Embryos. As with most scientific publications, it's a long title. That's in Nature, published online February 12th. They're both from Washington State University, Jennifer in Puyallup and Allison in Vancouver. Join us on the exchange if you have questions or comments. 800-838-3760 by phone. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Allison, can you make some assumptions or extrapolations about other fish that might be similarly affected by stormwater in their ecosystems?
Well, given that zebrafish, which are a pretty hardy lab fish, and coho salmon, which are a very sensitive local salmon species, both look the same when we expose them to stormwater, we would think that these results would apply to a lot of different species, and that many of the species swimming around in our local rivers and lakes would probably be affected similarly by stormwater. Now, there are probably some exceptions. There always are. There are some pretty tough fish out there as well, and chum salmon are one of those that, while we haven't looked at their lateral lines, in general, chum salmon are pretty resistant to many sorts of toxins, but those don't tend not to be a species that we in the Northwest really like to eat. So I think most of the species we like to eat would probably be similarly affected.
Jennifer, how specific could you get on what in the water might be the worst actor and therefore the best agent to work to control?
Fantastic question. That is an active area of research for us. So because of the complex nature of this chemical mixture and the fact that we don't even know the identity of, I'm going to estimate 80% of the chemicals that are in stormwater runoff, we don't even know what they are. So that's one of the areas of research that we're undertaking right now is, you know, can we get a better handle on what these chemicals actually are in this mixture? And there are things that are coming from, tire particles, for example, and those contain a really complex mixture of chemicals that are designed to protect the tires against wear, to protect them against damage from ultraviolet radiation, for example, vulcanizing agents, and these end up being aromatic, a lot of them aromatic chemicals with really long names that can be damaging to tissues of all sorts of creatures, including humans.
Wow, so things that you never think about being around us in our own environments, the fact is that literally where the rubber meets the road, things can happen and begin to react and then end up in our streams.
Yeah, and ultimately we do want to identify what are the responsible chemicals. Maybe it's only a handful of them. And perhaps in that case we can work at, A, designing treatment methods for our stormwater runoff before it ends up in the rivers and lakes. And B, source control. So if it's just a handful of chemicals and we can actually engineer those out with green chemistry approaches, great, let's do that.
So you mentioned in the research that there are some green stormwater systems. Are those very prevalent or rather rare these days still?
They are becoming increasingly common. I'm not sure what the regulations are in Oregon, but in Washington State, fairly recently, it became part of the code for the state that if you're going to build a new development, you have to first consider whether you can use green stormwater infrastructure approaches to deal with the runoff from the site. And those include techniques like rain gardens, for example, green roofs, things that will treat the water in sometimes very simple way. For example, the soil mixture that's recommended in Washington State for a rain garden is just 60% sand and 40% compost. And we have found in other studies that that manages to pull out most of the chemicals that are causing any type of harm that we're interested in.
But then do you have a sand or compost that you need to take off to a landfill at some point?
At some point, but that might be 20 years in the future. Mm-hmm. And most communities that are putting these in, they've done the math on it, and they're like, that is definitely worth it for us.
Is it as simple as things like, well, you mentioned already the rain garden, which sounds very simple. Are there things like settling ponds, too, just places where the water can sit for a while and the heavy stuff falls out of it?
Those are common in older developments, and we found that they're not as effective as at treating runoff as something where you actually get the water to infiltrate into the soil system at a faster rate.
Allison Coffin, we'll finish up with you, and just to get sort of a bottom line here for what people should take away from the research that you just produced and how we should view it.
Okay. I think the bottom line is that, first of all, there are a lot of pollutants floating around in our waters. I think most of us are aware of that, including plenty of things coming off of our roads that, as Jennifer said, we're still not entirely sure what they are. And that even if these pollutants don't directly kill the fish or don't affect it in a really obvious way, so if you're looking at a fish, you don't immediately see that there's something wrong with it, they can have a lot of negative effects on the fish that we care about, like our Northwest salmon. And we really need to do things like improving our green stormwater infrastructure to, as Jen was talking about, to make our fish healthier so that we can have healthier fish for us to eat, and a healthier environment.
Well, a lot of communities have been spray painting stencils of fish on their storm drains in recent years to remind people that that is where the water goes. And this is another good reminder in the research from these authors, which include Allison Coffin at Washington State University, Vancouver, in the Department of Integrative Physiology and Neuroscience. Thank you for joining us, Allison.
Thank you.
And Jennifer McIntyre, also at Washington State University, but at the Puyallup Research and Extension Center in charge of the rainwater collection. Jennifer, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks.